All right, so we're back with Suzanne Siegel on this part two of Henny with Kenny featuring Suzanne Siegel, author of T-I-N-Y and just all around good person, good sister, good soul. So with further ado, let's jump back into this part two of this episode and thank y'all for sticking with Henny with Kenny. Peace. So it's all messed up, and you know, I mean, and it was never perfect, but then also with the turn of events in this diaspora of a country, we just started taking it wasn't even steps back, it was running backwards, and that's what it's become now, because now it's okay when you know you have the leader technically of the free world. If it was ever free, saying no, all brown people are fucked up, and they're murderers, and they're rapists, and they're drug dealers, and they're in gangs, and they shouldn't be kneeling, and da 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 da, and their mothers are sons of bitches, and it gives them a pass now to be like, you know what, I was in the closet with my feelings about that, now I can act up. In buses, in malls, on airplanes, in airports.
Right.
Like, it just pretty much gave them, like, a pass to really act up.
Yeah, it was always there.
It was always there.
It's just like, oh, now my guy, not that other guy.
It's popular now. Remember what I said?
I see what
popular.
You're saying. Okay.
When things are popular, sad to say, white people gravitate to it.
Okay.
I mean, hell, white people help fucking hip-hop music.
Right.
You know, that's why it's, like, the biggest... You know, thing out there is because it wasn't the white kids in the suburbs started buying albums.
Yep.
You know, that, you know, our greats became even greater.
Right.
You know, and, but I also think them hearing like the pain of like a Public Enemy, of like a Chuck D, you know what I mean? Like, wow, this is what's really going on.
Yeah.
Kind of helped.
It does help.
It helped.
I was that young kid listening to Chuck D. You know what I mean?
It helped.
Like, oh, I'm listening to your poetry and I'm understanding what you went through, right?
Yeah.
All of that helps.
Yeah, and I mean, rap. You know, we're not talking about the state of rap right now, but like, listen to a Chuck D or listen even to like a Nas.
You're dating yourself.
Like, yeah, whatever. Nas, me and Nas like to, me and Nas the same age. Like, I think by hearing those experiences and hearing what. And, you know, being like a suburb kid, not a city kid, but being like a suburb kid, hearing that kind of stuff, like, ah, I get what they're going through. Like, it's fucked up in Queensbridge. You know, it's, or, you know.
Yeah, but that could easily turn into all those fucking neighbors are dangerous and I don't want to walk through them and those people are dead.
Exactly.
Right?
It's like, I think that's what the parents thought if they overheard it from outside the bedroom door. Like, we don't want you going there. But the way it's like, I want to go to fucking Queensbridge, you know. I want to go to Left Rack City, you know. But just due to the fact that those viewpoints, unfortunately, that are being spewed out from the highest pulpit in the nation, they're popular now.
Okay.
It's easier to jump on that bandwagon and not have any shame about your shit.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
They can because come out of the closet.
And
they're going to go back in the closet.
Because you can't even shame them because they're like... Fuck that.
This guy says it's okay.
He says it. He's fucking president of the United States.
Right.
I could be president. So fuck all black. Fuck it. Fuck women. Fuck people of color. Fuck them all.
This country,
you know?
We're so fucking obsessed.
But it was this, I'm saying it's a sprint backwards.
Right.
It's not just saying that we were ever out of that, but it was just like, go backwards, have no shame about your shit.
You know what? I don't see it as a sprint backwards. I see it as like,
I made my move go.
I see it as like, I don't see it as going backwards. I feel like we are moving forward and this is like a what do they call that death fucking rattle? You know what I mean? Like when somebody's dying, I'm just like that old school stuff that the president represents. There'll always be racism and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I
maybe it's his last go around.
I mean, not last.
I hope to God.
No, it's always going to be there. But when you think about the younger generation, I'm like, popular culture is black culture.
It is.
It is. That's it. It happened to have started in the Bronx when I was coming up as a kid.
That's the same thing Andy said yesterday. He's like, we vetted hip hop.
Right. It's like, that's the go to fucking Asia, the Philippines. I've been all over the world, and I'm just like,
they love it.
But then, the irony and the joke, I'm not the first one saying this, is just like, you don't like black people, but you sure do like their music and their style, and you're injecting your ass to look like a black girl.
And they're athletes.
Yes, that's right. Of course. Always.
Well, one thing that always bugs me out, it doesn't bug me out, but it can kind of gives me a tickle, is when I see like all white families and then like the kid has a LeBron James.
Always
like,
gonna have a LeBron
James. Like a LeBron James or whoever, but a black player like has the jersey on. I was like, I wonder how many black friends you actually have.
But here's the, you know, so
probably not.
So fucking interesting. It's like you were asking before about how do all of your experiences come together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you have these moments of epiphany. I was working in Detroit,
mm-hmm.
Michigan. By the way, in the 90s, Detroit was, and I was a crime reporter there. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, I was in downtown Detroit. That shit was, I thought the Bronx was, I was humbled when I got to Detroit. So I was like, I'm in the Bronx, I'm in the 70s. Nah, I can't handle it. And I was just like, wait, I have. Because it was just like this mess, just houses with nobody in them. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it was like, it was returning to nature. There was like pheasants and shit. I mean, it was so fucking like crazy Detroit at that time. But I was in downtown Detroit, and we had the Joe Louis Arena and mm-hmm. all this other stuff, and there was this big, huge fist. That sculpture. And I remember I was running. By the way, one of my favorite things that ever happened in Detroit, this is the way life works, where you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I understand those other people, and they understand me. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of on the thin side, and I was running, and this brother looks at me running by, and he goes, girl, you need to gain weight. And at that point, I was like, oh, I look like a crazy white bitch running through the streets of Detroit, already skinny. Yep. And this guy, that is not his ideal body form.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I mean, those are the, if you put yourself out of a comfort zone, right? Out of your life, right? Yeah. Mommy's not buying your way into wherever, right? You're going to learn shit unless you're stupid.
Yeah.
But the Joe Louis thing is just like popular culture, and many people have understood this, mm-hmm. is more important than who's ever in the White House. Yeah. Popular culture, and also now, the means of production, and by the means of production, mm-hmm. I mean this right now.
Mm-hmm.
My Instagram feed, by the way, Nikki Kriya got me on Instagram for the first time.
Oh.
Because she's a millennial. She's she's Jamaican-American.
She's at another place right now.
Right. She is. She's at a good place.
I can't see where she's working.
She's in a better place.
Yeah. Shout out to Nikki.
But she put me onto Instagram for the first time. And she told me who to follow. So I've been following whatever, all these young black influencers or whatever.
Okay, cool.
So like Instagram thinks I'm black. For whatever. Its algorithm is a little confused because Nikki set me up the first time. But I'm just like, now people can represent themselves, man.
Yeah.
It's just like you can say what you want to say and as many people, right? So it's like, so for me, I and maybe I'm naive, but I don't see us as like, I just don't see society as like jumping back. I'm like, we are it's two steps forward, one step back. It's all of those things, right? Mm-hmm. The arc of justice takes a really fucking long time. But I feel sure that like things are better and they're getting better. Is that what you're saying? That's a white people thing?
That's a white people thing.
Why?
Why? Like, for instance, the day after, and I tell this story almost every stage that I'm on. I tell this story on every stage I'm on. I was like, the day after the election, like.
Which one?
This one.
Okay.
Like, the face of some of my white brothers and sisters was just like, oh my God. Like, oh my God, he won. Like, yeah, he won. You know, it sucks.
Right.
But like, they're like, oh my God, we're so fucked. And I was just like, yeah, people of color, we've always been fucked.
you're like, actually, you're probably not that fucked.
I was like, you're not really that fucked. I was like, but welcome to being black. Yeah, welcome to being a person.
Welcome to not having your guy up there.
Not having your guy up there. You know,
not having someone who's looking out for your own interest.
Like, you know, like people in tears. I was like, it ain't that deep. I was like, yeah, is he a fucking clown?
Right.
Yeah, he's a fucking clown. And he's probably going to be worse than we actually thought, which he's proven every single day.
Right.
But I was just like, what do you expect?
Right.
What did you expect? Like, he's a fucking clown. And especially if you're from the East Coast, right. you knew he we was knew a
him.
Clown.
We knew him. We knew him from the rags in the 80s yep. and the 90s yep. and Howard Stern. Yep. And like it was before he had his reality show.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
We knew he was a clown. Right. We knew he was very bad at business. Right. You know, and, you know, yeah, he was in every rapper song, but that's probably all he was good for.
Right. Right.
You know, and it was just like, yeah. Things are gonna suck for a while, mm-hmm. you know, for at least 4 years,
right?
God willing, but you know, like we just didn't take it as hard,
okay?
You know, right. like
because you've been through the struggles,
yeah. Like right. no, because the struggle, it's not even a matter of been. Right. Like the struggle just always continues. Right. You know what I mean? Because that's just you know kind of what this country was built upon is built upon the backs of those less disenfranchised right. the most, right? So like we didn't. We knew it was bad, but it just was like, okay, the grind don't right. stop. You know, the struggle right. doesn't stop here. And if anything gets worse, right. which it has. But just keep going. We can't let that stop us.
Right.
And be in that moment like, oh, my God, right. like, it's the apocalypse.
Right.
You know, it's like, no, it's not the apocalypse yet.
Right.
So take it easy. So that's just my whole take on like that day after. Like I could just see in people's faces, mm-hmm. like, oh my God! It's like yeah, it really sucks. I'm with you,
right?
But this is not the end,
right?
This is not the end.
It felt like the end.
Yeah, this is not the end. You know, this is not the end. So that's just how that goes. So since you're a writer for such a long time, and I obviously still a writer now,
mm-hmm.
how important do you feel having a female voice in the writing world is?
I mean, there's a lot of us out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think about my voice as being a female mm-hmm. voice, mm-hmm. I guess. It is, obviously. Mm-hmm. but I never considered it until that. For me, it's like... You know, I see it as like a couple of levels down of mm-hmm. just like, I am able, like right now I'm writing travel stories.
Okay.
That's a good example, mm-hmm. right? So for me, it's more like I have been to places where people don't think about traveling to, right? Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like the best country I've ever been to in the world happened to be in East Africa, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I am able to write about places. Travel is such an important part of my life. Mm-hmm. And that's all mixed up and fucked up with race too, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're afraid to go a place. Why are you afraid to go there, right? I remember I travel, you know, it's like, I've been traveling for so long. Like, mm-hmm. I'm such a fucking traveler, Kenny. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I'm probably better at that. You don't get paid for doing that, but I'm probably better at that. I remember somebody saying to me, I'm not going to mention who it was, but she was just like, but... what's it like going to these places where everyone's so poor? And I was like, you know, that's the kind of shit where you're just like, oh, that's how you see it.
Yep.
You see it as poor. And also there's this sort of sense of fear, disdain, disgust. Yep. I don't want to see that.
Yeah, but they also live longer than you.
Right, right. But it's like you only want to go places, and this keeps going back to what we're talking about. It's mm-hmm. like, what's personal to you? What are you comfortable with? Why does difference make you uncomfortable? Why are you afraid, right? It's mm-hmm. like, no. Once you travel through those places, all those ideas and fears you have, mm-hmm. they're going to give way to something else, right? And it's like, so I feel like more to me, and this happened with Tiny New York. Mm-hmm. It was like, I felt like I had this pulpit where I could show people, look what people in Queens are doing,
mm-hmm.
right? Look what, and this is, you know, this is related to Trump, but without saying Trump, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not like a super political person either, mm-hmm. but it was just like exactly what you're saying. You're standing up there in the White House mm-hmm. talking about how people are rapists and they're fucking criminals and all this stuff. And all I knew is I was going out looking for people in tiny places. Mm-hmm. Many of them happen to be from Latin America.
Yep.
And they happen to be the hardest working motherfuckers with great story, a good American, Kenny. Yeah. Like what anybody would consider a good American. You know, you're taking care of your family, you're mm-hmm. like, you're starting a business in a mm-hmm. tiny little place, you're doing all these things, you're making it happen for your kid, even if you don't understand English that well, your kid does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was like, I came with this perspective that was pretty global,
mm-hmm.
and I was writing a very tiny book about mm-hmm. tiny places in New York,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to tell other people's stories, right? Mm-hmm. Not my stories, whatever, but it was like those people's stories in the book were like, oh, there's a guy who came from Mexico who wanted to make clothing, who happened to be gay and couldn't be gay where he was from, and came here and like loved dogs and wanted to make dog clothing. I mean, only in fucking New York City, right? This guy comes from this little town. He's gay as fuck. He wants to make clothing for little dogs, right? And he could come to New York City. Not everyone's gonna love him. But I love him. And he found a place, and he has this little store in Jackson Heights where he's, like, making fashion for dogs. And I'm like, only in New York City could that happen.
Yeah.
Part of it's accidental. People don't want him here.
Yeah.
Right? People looking at that guy, whatever people in the White House are talking about. But I'm able to tell that person's story. And this is to me about, like, being a journalist and telling the truth and telling nonfiction. It's like, I didn't have a political agenda going there. But if you happen to think that all immigrants are, like, not contributing to our country, I am the granddaughter of immigrants, right? It's like all this shit is, again, personal to me, right? Even though I'm like a white girl, right? It's like, okay, but my grandfather grew up in a place where they didn't like Jews, and he came here and they didn't like Jews who spoke German. Shit, he couldn't win, right? So it's like, so we all have our different stories, but if you're open to the world and you're empathetic, it's like, then you can realize why your grandpa Fritz's story is not that much different than the gay dog designer in Jackson Heights.
Yeah.
It's like all of it is one thing. Yeah. So anyway, that was a big aside to your question.
No. It's great. It's a great story. I feel like the one thing I pulled out of what you said was what it is to be American, right? To like, you know, to be a hard worker. Regardless of, you know, sexual orientation or where the fuck you're from, that's what I feel is being twisted right now.
Explain.
That's what I feel is being twisted from this, you know, this Cheeto of a leader, which I don't feel like he is a leader.
He's not a leader.
But I feel like that's what's being twisted. What it is to be an American.
Yeah, of course it is.
You know. And
to
like,
be an American is this.
Yeah, but it's not really. It's really
It's
really our native.
But that's the code, fucking. Yeah, that's the code.
But that's and that's the wrong code.
It's their death breath.
Yeah, yeah. It's their death breath. It's their death breath because, you know, they're worried.
Right,
you know,
about
like the invasion of the immigrants.
But like, there's enough for all of us here.
Yeah,
there's
way more than enough. But that fear, that insecurity, is what twists this.
Yes.
What it means to be an American and who's American and when they get to be an American.
When do you decide when somebody gets to be an American?
I don't know.
That's the other thing. It's just like, and again, that's, and by the way, that's being from New York. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the more diffuse, you know, like the more diffuse that is in New York, you will never ever lose sight of the fact that this is a fucking immigrant nation.
Yeah.
You cannot.
There's, you can't go anywhere.
My neighborhood in Jackson Heights is just like Bengali, Himalayan, Nepali, Mexican, Colombian, old Jews, old Italians, right? Yeah. All that kind of shit, right? So you're just like, but somehow people forgot. Maybe they're a third generation, I don't know, German something, white person in the Midwest. And like, they forgot that is what our nation is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you just want to shut the doors now? Yeah. And then you think this is going to be the best nation that it could be. No, that's when we would start to die, right? Is when all this new blood and new fucking interesting cultures, all of it somehow ends up amalgamating. That actually happens. I know that sounds like, but like New York is that. It's like.
Yeah, but it's one of few places in the country that do that. I've actually. I just finished a book, and it takes me like years to read books. But I actually finished a book called Searching for Whitetopia.
Okay. Where is Whitetopia?
It exists. It's not far from here.
Oh,
it's not
for real?
Far from where
is
we're sitting
Westchester?
Right now. No, closer.
Oh, Long Island?
No, closer. There's these. Searching Whitetopia is basically this black author. I think he's mixed, but he may be all black. But it's basically this author. He goes around to the whitest sections of America.
Awesome.
From the East Coast to the West
Coast.
The least integrated place. I mean, places that are probably like 98% to 99% white.
Okay.
And people retire to
these
places.
Are they happier there?
They are happy. believe it or not, they are happy.
I believe
Because like, one thing, because since you're a travel writer, next time you see like, you know, the best places in America, are always the whitest
places. The happiest places, the blah, blah, blah.
They're always the whitest places.
Oh, that's fucking interesting.
And yeah, so it's a very, very interesting book. I mean, he goes from east to west, north to south,
okay,
Midwest, and he talks to all these people.
In these towns.
And, okay, like, he stays in these towns. And, you know, some of these towns, like, they're super white, but then they're getting, like, overrun by hipsters. So then, like, the older white people kind of get pissed off by the hipsters because then they make shit very expensive, as you know. And then they leave.
Right.
But still, like, they rather have, you know, a red-bearded, you know, red-haired hipster
in their hood
than someone who's, like, of Mexican descent even black, whatever the case may be. And it's a very interesting, book. I mean, it took me a while to finish it, but I finished it. And it's just, but it's like Upper East Side,
Yeah, that shit is white.
I mean, but there was places on the Upper East Side that Bette Midler couldn't even get into those neighborhoods because she was new money, because she wasn't born from money.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it's just like, motherfucking Bette Midler. Right. Like, she's as white as they come, you know, but
that's like a WASPy enclave.
Exactly. Right. So, like, it was talking about, like, neighborhoods like that, but then it was also talking about, you know, places in Georgia that were basically originally owned by, like, black people that were run out in the middle of the night by white people with guns and fire and everything like that. And I think at this certain part of Georgia, I think black people owned maybe about 36% of the land. Mm-hmm. By the turn of the 19th century, black people owned like 2% of the land.
They just pushed them off.
And they either threatened them with death and some died, or they just chased them off.
Yep.
And when the ancestors of these people that were chased off tried to, like, you know, reclaim the land, they're like, oh, well, yeah, those records, they were in a fire.
And we lost them.
Yeah, we lost them. You know, so it's just insane. But, like, you know, and then they built, like, these huge, you know, cul-de-sacs of shit. You know, the suburban shit, right? You know, cul-de-sacs and all these big houses. But some of them are literally on the graves of these slaves, or graves of these black people that were down south. So it's just, like, insane to kind of read these stories and hear about people that, like, you know, oh, well, I had to leave, like, Orange County, California, because it was just getting too diverse. You
That's
know?
The code word, too urban.
Yeah, so, you know, we had to move to Montana. Right. We had to move to Utah. You know what I mean? But then how, like, he would visit these places like Utah or Montana, and, like, literally the pastors would be in the pulpit preaching to their white congregation, like, you guys got to make more babies because, like,
they're taking over.
Right, and it's that deep.
Right.
Like, you're taking it. It's like in your sermon, my dude. So it was just, it's a book.
Oh, I don't ever want to live in Whitetopia.
Whitetopia.
I probably can't afford to live there.
But I mean, it talks about, you know, so there, and then, you know, like, even like the Washington, D.C. suburbs, and, you know, obviously New York, and even these outskirts of New Jersey, even.
I believe that, because they're, like, expensive.
Yeah.
They're expensive.
Right. Either it's expensive or it's just so, like, East Bumblefuck.
Yeah,
New
but
Jersey.
If you, it's funny, if you read about, like, what zoning has done in this whole, like, because it's money. It's what you said in the beginning of this conversation. It's we don't want to let go of what we have. And I've been reading that these places that are the least diverse places, they're able to do it through this, you know, non-racialized zoning. But if you won't allow a two-story, say, unit, right, that's like people are sharing, whatever, then you're going to keep out a class of people who can't afford a house less than $500,000.
Yep.
Guess what those people might turn out to be, right? Yep. They're like Indian second generation immigrants, they're black, they're whatever.
Yep.
So what's happening is you're de facto able to keep people out by changing your zoning and making sure that you need a really big plot of land and one big house on one.
Yep.
So that has all happened in these towns. I'm sure that you're talking about. I haven't read this book, but
Then it affects education because obviously, you know, you keep those out, then you have all the resources that you want. You have the teachers that you want.
You're
you know, everyone's
them more
super involved.
Because, right.
And, you know, community politics and da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And, you know, that's basically how you keep shit online.
Right.
So speaking of books, what's the last book that you read? Or what book are you reading right now?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm like you. I tell you something. I'm on Instagram too much, Kenny Thacker. I used to read so much. And then I'm just like, I don't know. I read a lot of Buddhist books, to be honest with you. I'm like, because life is so stressful that I'm like, it's hard to find I think it's really important that everyone is on a journey of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so that could be, for me, that learning is like, oh, there's this thing called Buddhism that's been around for like 3,000 years.
Yep.
Those motherfuckers know more than I do. They have figured some shit out, and like I want to understand it and learn about it. So I read a lot about Buddhism and meditation and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So that's what's right now on my little nightstand.
Buddhism books.
Yeah, yeah, books about Buddhism, whatever they are. I'm like, that for me has been a way for me to understand the world and also understand myself and sort of navigate through this life in a less painful, freaked out kind of way. Oh. Yeah.
What podcast are you listening to? Henny with Kenny.
That's my favorite one.
That's everybody's favorite podcast. Number one podcast in the
world. Yeah, I'm not a big podcast.
When was the last time you taught somebody something, and what was it?
Oh, that's a good one.
I know. These questions are fire.
I'm so bad on the spot. Hold on, let me think.
Didn't I send you the question?
You probably did. I didn't look at it. Fucking trifling. You know, it's interesting because going back to Aunt Becky.
Yeah.
When I actually went in to teach my kids, that whole news story was breaking. And I went to the head of legal outreach and I said, can I talk to my kids about this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I wanted to go in there and explain to them, right? And hear what they had to say, because they had all heard about,
the cheating scandal.
You right, can't. Right. I couldn't like be an American or even like a citizen of the world probably and not have heard about
it. Spread like that.
So I wouldn't. Fast. I don't. Right. So everybody hated it. That's when like the whole world came together, except for them.
Well, some people hated it. Some people were like, shit. Is my name on that list?
Oh, I don't run with those people.
No.
But
we weren't in the Hamptons together.
So I just wanted to tell my kids, like, do you understand? I want, you know, because these kids are just like, their parents came from Bangladesh to Queens.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden they're in school.
Yeah.
Right? And so they're taking care of the little brothers and they came from West Africa and all this stuff, other stuff. And there's so much for them to learn. They're so smart. Half my kids, they're smarter than me. They understood grammar better than I did, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, I wanted to talk to them about that particular situation. I spent like 15 minutes before we started talking about conjugating verbs or whatever it is. I was just like, this like when you just go offline and talk to the camera. I was like, do you understand that the whole United States out there, right, they all have a way to get where we want you guys to go, right? And we don't have any slick way for you to get there.
They have a way to skip the
line. I can't write a thing. I don't know the person at Harvard. I just don't. We don't have hooks. That's what it's called, right? You have a hook, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, so you have to work harder than them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to work harder than them.
You have to.
Right? It's like people are going to look at you and they're going to think things about you that aren't true.
Yeah.
And that's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
But you're here right now. You're learning. Your parents, you are smart enough to be here right now. We're lucky enough that there's this place. So I would say that having a car and hearing what they had to say about it, that they were upset about it, all that kind of stuff. They wanted to understand how it all worked. And I talked to them a lot about college admissions and SAT. Well, all of it, of course, is like a PSA on why you have to study hard and work hard and learn how to write and all that stuff. But I would say that's probably the most important conversation in a teaching, but I'm always learning thing also, right?
Yeah, we're always.
Yeah, well, so it was.
If you're
a
good person, you're always learning.
Dang.
You're a dumbass.
dumbass, you think you know some shit already.
So this is the last question.
Yeah.
So what was the best piece of advice you ever received from someone?
That could be a whole podcast. The best piece. And it's funny because I, you know, on your notes thing on the iPhone, I actually have a note that says advice. And I write, and I have written down, I went back in the annals of my brain, and for the past 3 years, I've been trying to remember what people have told me that has stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
So one's negative. They're all from my stepfather, Felix Orlando Navarro, right? You know, raised by a Puerto Rican, right? Jaime Rosado, who worked for this company, he's the head of Puerto Rico Creative.
Oh, that's the brother. Yeah, that's the brother.
He once said to me, it was like, I felt seen, as I did by your wife. He was like, so you're a Jewish girl, and you were raised by a Puerto Rican man. Is that what you're telling me right now? And I was like, yeah, that's, you know, yeah. And he was like, that's interesting. So what Felix Orlando Navarro taught me, may he rest in peace, was this. And this is, actually, I didn't plan this, but this is going to work. I have a little bit of the, like, oh, I got a little bit of the goosebumps, right? Because it's about what's personal to you. And my stepfather said, we always had some hoopties around, okay? Mm-hmm. Felix, he was a Marine. He was Puerto Rican, but he was a Marine, mm-hmm. and he was proud American. Mm-hmm. He might have even been a Republican. He definitely voted Republican.
Maybe. I mean, if he served in the military.
Right, most, right. Most so he, like, he it was an interesting, right? Not everything mm-hmm. goes away according to what you think it is, yep. right? So he said to me, and the cars, I literally had a Plymouth Horizon. He had a Cadillac. There was whatever. That shit was breaking down all the time, Kenny Thacker. It was breaking down all across Bronx. It was, and he always used to say, it's idling a little low. I don't know what that meant. All it meant to me was like, if I was in a red light, unless I was hitting the gas, it would stop. And so I was like, it's amazing that you think about it, but like I got caught in that car, not in great places, mm-hmm. and it died, right? And so what had happened
with
was.
With no cell phone.
Right, like, no cell phone. Like, this is the 80s, right? Yep. And he said to me, I'll never forget, I got home, somebody gave me a jump. You remember jump? Yep, like jump, whatever, you yep. have your cables. I knew what was happening. I was like, oh, I need a jump. I'll call, stand outside the car and wait for somebody to come along. And he said to me, I don't drive anymore, mm-hmm. but this has only always proven true. He said, Susie, the only people that are going to stop for you are people in fucking shitty cars just like yours. Because they understand.
They know your pain.
They know your pain.
The brother in the Lambo is not stopping.
That's what he taught me, Kenny Thacker. And it's like, oh, that shit is personal to them. They have been in a fucking shitty car, stuck on the side of the road at night, trying to get home. That makes sense to them in a way where they're not in their nice Lambo or Audi or whatever, being like, oh, that poor fuck brought it on themselves. They must have made some bad decisions in their life.
Becky didn't pay for your school.
You didn't. That's their own fault.
You didn't skip the line. You should have skipped the line like we did. But the crazy thing is that's the best piece of advice to give because it actually translates to everything it that does. We've been talking it about. Does. But that's why shit doesn't change. That's why shit hasn't changed. Because like I said to you earlier, you can't fight if you've never benefited from any type of diversity, affirmative action, or ever had to fight for any type of fairness, mm-hmm. because you could relate to being disenfranchised as a woman or a person of color.
Yep.
Why does it matter? So it's just like the Lambos and the Ferraris driving past your Impala, your 86 Impala.
It was a Plymouth Horizon.
Plymouth Horizon. You know. But like it's the exact same model though. It's the exact same model.
You're gonna drive past
unless you've learned like what it's like to be, you know, sexually discriminated against or racially discriminated against, then like it's just not on your number one. It's not on your number one shit.
It's not reality.
It's not on your number one shit.
Right.
So like if you're in that fast foreign car, you're just trying to get from A to B faster than the person that's on the side of the road.
Yeah, and you will because you got a better car.
And you will because you got a better car and you've had better, you know, opportunities and stuff like that laid out for you. Right. Throughout the process of getting in that car and whatever it takes to get that car. Whereas, you know, when you're in the 94 Sentra or the Chrysler or whatever, the old ass Chrysler, like you just don't. But someone that has will stop for you just like you said. Because they'll be like, man,
I feel that shit.
I know what it's like to be stuck on the Cross Bronx in the fucking snow. You know,
I do.
Like,
right.
So that person be like, you know what?
Right.
If it wasn't for a motherfucker that helped me,
right,
I gotta pay it forward. You know, and I personally feel like if you don't know what it's like to be stuck on the Cross Bronx in the snow, then like you just don't care.
But it can't. Oh, it's not. It can't always be like that.
It is though. It is though.
But you know what? So it's so interesting because I'm like, I know we're supposed to be wrapping it up. Yeah. But does that mean? I think about this because some of my friends now, we grew up in the Bronx, whatever. Mm-hmm. Some of them have some money now, right? Mm-hmm. And so their kids are growing up with some amount of money. Mm-hmm. I'm like, they're never gonna know. You can't pretend that you don't have money once you have money.
Yeah.
Right. But they're not. I don't know, do the laundry for their iPhone, whatever the fuck it is. They have an iPhone. So it's like, that shouldn't have to be, and because I'm like the Pollyanna, not cynical person, I think there's another way. I haven't figured out what it is yet, to be honest with you, that somebody who's never had a shitty car could also feel some empathy and sympathy, even though they themselves have never gone through it. Are you saying you don't think it's ever?
Obviously, we know what happens with exceptions. It only happens, I think, if you're surrounded by a circle that has that type of empathy. Like, if you're never, if you're just not around that, like, there's few and far between. I'm not going to say it's everybody, but I would say it's few and far in between that do have that empathy. Like, you know what? I bet being stuck on the Cross Bronx in the snow sucks. Let me stop my BMW 8 Series or whatever and help this person out.
But that's what it's
about.
That's what it's about.
It's a dime dozen.
All right.
It's very few. And you might be out there all night for your BMW to come help you out.
But that's the difference. It's like you're here getting a stream of kids into this company, right, through your Young Commodore program, right? Because those kids could be stuck on the side of the road. You know what it means, right, to not have, and you realize that you are now in a position of some power where you are whatever. Yeah. You're doing what you can with what you have.
I'm definitely working
that, right? All right?
Working with what I got.
Right. So in our everyday lives, it's like, what can you do? Like, don't keep driving. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Okay, you can't stop for everybody. Yeah. But like, right?
But it's like, so now we're going to get into work mode part of the conversation. But then it's like, how do you build the case for empathy, right?
I don't think it's about building a case.
Then.
It's about raising your children, right? No, I mean, it's about opening, but it's also about like traveling and not just travel, but getting out of your own fucking this. You know what I mean? That's just like, and by the way, money keeps you protected.
Yeah.
From all of that, cushioned.
But people, I think this is where they're safe, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, people get, and in that safety, they get comfortable.
Yes.
And then they feel they don't never have to change.
Agreed.
Because this modus operandi has been going on for decades and centuries, like you said before.
Move to Whitopia.
And they're good to fucking retire, you know, retire with a couple, you know, seven figures in the thing. It's like, you know what? I did my time. Because honestly, there was one story about a cop from L.A. that retired to like one of these Whitopias. Okay. And he was just like, yeah, I was just tired of all, you know, I saw the like the worst of the worst
he
of
did.
People.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to be around anymore. And around here, everyone is the same. And like, I could just like kind of retire and spend the last 20, 30 years of my life like not having to be around that.
That's
you
your
know?
Choice. You know what I'm saying?
And but so I mean, yeah, some of the stories and why people move out to those places.
Yeah.
But what I also gained is that some, not all, but they wanted to be Leave It to Beaver. They want that kind of life.
Right.
Like streams and shit.
Right.
Corner stores.
Money,
you know.
Money.
Yeah.
Money, and it's so interesting because when you travel, you're just like, oh, if you have money when you travel in India and places that are sort of hard to travel, you can protect yourself, right, against that discomfort and poverty or sweatiness or crowdedness of all the things, right? So it's like, so that's where money's fucking scary, right? Because it's like, that's what happens is just like, you know, it was so hard, like, growing up and not, you know, I had enough. I wasn't hungry. But, like, you know what I mean? You were just like, you wanted more.
But you knew people that were.
You did.
Yep.
You knew people worse off than you and better than off than you, right?
Exactly.
Like we're
right
all going to always be, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, sometimes people that you know that are better, they don't really care about those two other stories.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, well, I mean, I keep referring back to this book, but like that's what I was kind of getting. It was just like, yeah, most, not, well, these people that they were talking about in this book, like they just literally wanted that Leave It to Beaver kind of, and even raise their families like in that. So screw like what a New York is or what a Detroit is or LA or whatever.
Most,
you know, DC, a very mixed kind of place.
Right.
Like, no, we want. Literally, we want like the Andy Griffin show. Because, like, if you remember, like, Leave It to Beaver, Andy Griffin show, they lived in Whitopias, right?
Listen to me. This fucking whole thing about nice is overrated. Yep. Fuck nice. I'm serious. You want it to be so nice. You want air conditioning, right? And you want a fucking parking spot. I'm serious, Kenny. That's what people want.
Yeah.
They want it to be nice and comfortable and easy.
Yep.
And I'm like, I guess I understand that. To me, I don't see the appeal because it's what we're saying before. You're not going to fucking be challenged. You're not going to be uncomfortable.
Nope.
You're not going to learn.
Nope.
New York is not an easy place to live, last time I checked.
Nope.
It's crowded on the fucking subway. We got rats, right? It's expensive, right?
Yep.
It's like all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, but every day I'm alive and I'm learning and I'm just like, every day is a new experience. I would feel like I was choking to death in a place where everyone was the same and everyone agreed and like all that kind
of
stuff.
Well, that's why you see a lot of young people from places like
they
that
leave.
Move and come to
of
New York.
Of course they do.
Or they go to L.A. or they go, you
know,
to Chicago or whatever, places like that. Because it was like, yo, like I used to drive tractors.
Right.
You know, that was my job after school.
Right.
You know, and
they
like.
They felt like there was more to the world.
There was more, more to the world.
So either you have that curiosity and you're willing to be uncomfortable and step out of your place, right? Or you just want it to fucking be easy and buy your way into wherever Aunt Becky got her kid into school, university,
USC,
whatever.
USC Santa Cruz.
Oh, thank you,
Santa Not Cruz. Even that great of a fucking school.
I went to a better school than that.
We might have a question.
Oh, okay.
Before we go, let's see.
All right.
It's about Alex, actresses. All right, yeah, no questions.
All right.
Oh, and they're not even on anyway. Anyway, I think that was a good place to kind of put pin in it. We might have to do like a part five of this. But
I'll toast to this lovely hang.
So, but before we go, you got to tell everybody where they can find you. So, like on all the socials.
Oh, okay.
And where to find the book.
All right.
So,
you want me to hawk my book right
now? Hey, look, you know, we got to be
right.
For five
the most important thing, I would just say follow my Instagram. It's just called Tiny New York. So, that's Twitter, that's Instagram, that's Facebook.
It.
Tiny New York, TINY, New York. Easy.
It'll be in the description of the podcast. Okay. I'll put it there.
So, and I'm always poking around, looking around to all the tiny little places and things and where people are not operating with a lot, but making some shit happen. And to me, that's exciting.
Americans.
America,
that are doing
that. Right.
America.
They might have an accent, but they are actually American.
Yeah. For sure.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for having me.
You know, it was always
I enjoyed
pleasure.
The handy. I got a good buzz on.
Well,
good.
Hopefully your bar upstairs is open. Right. I don't know. We may just have to finish what we got.
All right.
And everybody that's still listening, you're listening, and you know, if you're listening to this podcast on Apple and Spotify podcasts, you know how to find me, just at Kenny Thacker, at KENITHACKER, you know, for all good things. And Sister Susie, Suzanne, Siegel, all your many nicknames.
Becca.
I cannot thank you enough. I say this at the end of every podcast because I mean it, but the great thing about having this podcast that I get my guests all to myself. So especially like my sisters and like my brothers that I don't really get like just one-on-one.
We don't
time.
Usually get to do
this. Like,
you we're
know,
at a party.
Right. So like I like having like this unadulterated.
It's fun.
It's
rare.
It lets me be selfish.
Yeah.
It lets me be selfish. I get to talk shit. You know, by I'm Becky. So, you know, like this is like my special time and I get to learn more about you and, you know, things you find important and things I find important, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's the special part about the podcast that I get my friends selfishly to myself.
Happy to be here.
And, you know, and everyone that's listening, this has been another great episode of Henny with Kenny featuring Suzanne Siegel. And we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.
Deuces up. A town day out.